It's Wednesday, January 15th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 327 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 30 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad.
This is John.
Alrighty, we're doing one more episode remotely, and also my throat is not being kind to me today, so we're going to keep this to our somewhat reduced length. But the good news is that overall, it's been a slow process, but my throat does seem to be getting better. So as of the next couple of episodes, we're going to try going back to our original length and see how that works out. Look forward to that if you like hearing us, which I'd imagine you do since you're listening to the show. One announcement, and then we'll roll into it. Chris wanted to plug something that he's doing locally in Waterloo, Iowa. He's having a free movie screening for the movie The Gamer's Hand of Fate on January 23rd at 6 p.m. Once again, it's a completely free showing to anyone who might be in the area. It's just a chance to get together and hang out a little bit with some of the local gaming crowd. And Chris wanted to throw out some thanks to Zombie Orpheus Entertainment, which are the people, by the way, that do all the gamers stuff, as well as Rennie for being so helpful in getting this set up. And he's got a link to a Facebook page that will tell you all the exact details of the when, where's and why's and how's and all that kind of stuff. So if you are in the Iowa area or interested in heading out that way for a screening of that movie, then be sure to check the show notes for a link to that Facebook event and get signed up and go out there and see Chris and punch him for us. The topic we're going to cover today, let me set this up a little bit, and I want John to introduce it because of the fact that I think he has a perspective on it that is a little different than mine. I don't think necessarily a different opinion, he just has a different perspective. Right now, one of the things that John and I are doing is over the years, people have asked us to do an actual play podcast or asked us not to do an actual play podcast. And we were approached by Master Geek Theater, which is a podcast that went defunct a couple years back. And they were interested in doing a Skies of Glass actual play. So I'm running it and John is playing it along with several folks from their side. And we're hoping to have the first episode out within a couple of days. And this is kind of a new art form for us. So in addition to learning a brand new group and they're trying to learn a brand new game, we're all trying to kind of figure out how to make this AP thing work. So be a little patient with us through the first couple of episodes. But with that set up and out of the way, so we had a session of this actual play recording last night. John, take it away.
Okay. So we are playing in a Skies of Glass game, post-apocalyptic, no fantasy whatsoever, not even very much advanced technology, wandering around Georgia of the somewhat near future. And a broader topic of gaming concern came to me because the way that our social group is currently set up, we have one character who is extremely assertive, quick acting to the point of rashness, and it's all very well role played. We're not worried about this player being a jerk or anything at all. But the others of the cast, myself including, are either playing more reactive and less assertive player characters, or are simply quieter people. And over the course of the first several of these gaming sessions, the game has sort of been more like Dan and this one particularly aggressive player character going back and forth and back and forth with additional supplemental commentary and opinion from the rest of the cast than a truly multipolar game. So the question that I raised in the back room, which is now the discussion topic for the evening, is what do you do in a game where one person, be it purely and nobly in character or problematically, just a loud jerk, is responding to everything the GM says, jumping out, taking unilateral action all the time, hogging the ball, so to speak, and the rest of the cast isn't really doing much? What do you do if you're a GM and you have the situation? What do you do if you are playing a loud character and you suddenly realize that this is happening all around you? What do you do if you're playing one of the more quiet characters who is kind of getting bored by the whole thing?
One thing I do want to stress, though, is that this is not some like crisis level issue or something like that. I certainly don't want this individual, because I 99% sure he listens to Fear the Boot, to hear this and to take the opposite extreme of turning his character into a mouse.
Because, no. Right. And I was careful to bifurcate between the two situations because I think they demand two different answers. Situation A, which is what we have, in which one character is loud because the character is loud, and situation B, in which you have a player who always demands to sit right behind the GM and scream into his ear every time there's a pause of breath. We don't have that. We have one loud dude and five quiet dudes in character, or you whatever.
Know, I went through something like this on a full group scale, kind of in the early years of our gaming. This is something that Chad will probably remember. The gaming group that we started with, it was me, Tex, Chad, a guy named Neil, and then on and off, there was a guy named Darren. You know, we were all spastic teens. We were loud. We were excited. The games, quite frankly, got rather silly, but, you know, whatever. And we were having fun. And that's the point of a role-playing game. But it was a very loud group. Oftentimes, initiative, especially out of combat in terms of who was acting, came down to who was yelling the loudest and most cogently. And then we bring into the group Mike Kalinowski, who's very timid.
He's very measured in his responses to things.
And he really got freaked out by that and several times pulled me aside as the game master, basically saying, like, I can't function within this group because they're not giving me a chance to do anything. And at the time, you know, being, I suppose, a somewhat less sophisticated individual, my response to him was, well, so just jump in there, you know, take the chance. And so let's start there. Is there some validity in saying that, you know, because, John, one of the things that I as a game master contemplated, and I don't know per se that this is the right answer because I don't sit on the same side of this game that you guys do, is some of the answer that you guys need to step up a little more? Or do you feel that that's really too far out of character or just...
It's out of character for my character. It's certainly not out of character for me, judging by all the forum posts and Reddit posts of people who wish I would shut up and let other people talk on this podcast. I think it's pretty safe to say that I can jump into a tabletop game. My solution, if it's going to come from me, and part of it should, that I've been percolating on since our last session, was not to yell over this other player in character and try to countermand all the things he's shouting at us directly, because that's not what I would do here. But I will, I think, be more aggressive about immediately declaring my actions and reactions and showing much less concern for bringing them in line with a quote-unquote group course of action that is currently being entirely dictated by him. So instead of saying, no, you go to hell, I'm just going to say, well, I go north the next time he says, well, I go south when we're at a group juncture. And we'll see if that creates creative and productive drama and debate, or if it just blows the group up and ends the game.
Well, and that was something that I posed when we were discussing this, was I created two little faux algebra equations. And I'm going to use the word determined here. And I don't know if that's exactly the right word. You could talk about somebody who's excited, somebody who's loud, boisterous, proactive. I mean, you could pick any number of adjectives here, but I'm just going to use determined just for simplicity's sake. So determined character plus determined character equals what? Equals X, you know, solve for X. And then the second equation that I threw out is determined character plus X, once again, plus solve for X here, equals a happy group where everyone's getting what they want out of the game. And to me, those are the two ways of looking at it. Okay, so he goes south, you go north. And it doesn't matter whether it's this game, any game. You've got two people that are equally opinionated about what they want to do. Or, you know, you have multiple alphas at the table, whether we're talking about characters or players. And if one of them goes north and the other goes south, you very well may have a game-killing moment of dysfunction on your hands, even if neither party intended it to be as such. As a game master, there's not a whole lot you can do if the party reaches a point where they refuse to function as a unit.
Well, what's the underlying problem here for you guys? Because obviously I'm not in this game. Is it the problem that you just have one guy, the quirk of his character, and the quirk of the other people and their characters is that he's monopolizing all the time? Or is it a matter of you have these other players who are just like, they're having fun, but they're just not proactive?
We have a combination. I think we have some players who are quite passive. I think we have some players who have a range of play, but who are playing characters who would not directly stand up to a loud, brash, authoritative character. I myself am in that camp. Dan has danced around the point of saying, hey, everyone, play more, get your butts off the bench. Do we need
one? Well, I was going to say, what's the need here? Do you need the alpha to calm it down? Because I certainly understand that I'm an alpha player, and I have been told, and I have an understanding of myself, that I need to calm it down at times. Or do you need beta players to step it up? Or like both need to happen?
I don't
know.
Because
there's different strategies for each one.
Right. That's going to be the experiment. The experiment will be the next time we get to a crossroads and the current alpha player declares his action and starts walking off the way he's going to go without knowing or caring if anyone is walking behind him, I'm going to start walking some other way as long as I don't immediately agree with it. And then we are going to have a conflict. I think at that point, there's been a little bit of this already. There will be a sort of battle for the betas, and whether or not we can force compliance on behalf of the outvoted alpha as a question that remains.
Well, I mean, it's like a dog pack. You're going to have two alphas and they're going to quote unquote fight for dominance. And then the rest of the betas are going to follow along.
Right.
Alpha comes because we're human beings and we are not dogs. The power of the alpha player comes from the agency that the beta players give him.
Right. And there may be, at least at the present moment, without some sort of MacGuffin or unifying threat that, as far as I'm aware of, has not yet entered the equation, there may be a point where my character, with the possible exception of one or two others who he really cares about, is quite ready to tell the other alpha to go to hell, and he likewise. And then from there, the game explodes.
Well, or might explode. I mean, I think it is entirely possible that this gets played out in RP, because one thing that I have to give very much to his credit, and I'll talk about how I'm dealing with this as a game master in more detail here in a little bit, but there was a point where I had an equally strong-willed NPC lock horns with him, and the player backed down what his character was doing. Now, he didn't per se, you know, immediately abandon ship and change his character or anything like that, but he didn't keep escalating it. You know,
You reached into the Magic GM pocket and took out his character hook and stuck him with
No, I'm not talking about that
one. I could be able to do that.
I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the father of the ranch,
who you, through your GMing, caused to take the poll that I'm talking about right now and let him get outvoted.
But the thing that I
was, someone who's not playing this game, I have no clue what you guys are talking
about. Okay, so let me explain this very, very briefly. Where they were starting is they're starting in the town of Jessup, Georgia. One of the women that we were playing with, she is playing a character that's a 17-year-old girl who is the daughter of a local, he's basically a horse breeder. Okay, so you call him a rancher if you want, I guess, but he runs a horse stable. She ends up falling afoul of one of the political factions within this town. It's a small town, but small town politics type stuff.
I hate this small ball crap.
They're trying to decide what to do in terms of sorting that situation out. Do they stay and fight it? Do they leave the town? Whatever. And the father of this girl, okay, so the father of the 17-year-old girl, basically, after having already lost his wife and having seen some of the violence that surrounds the town and fearing the political firestorm that's coming, wants them to take both of his daughters, both the PC and a younger NPC daughter, and take them out of the town and come back later when things have blown over. And the context here is the alpha character in question came from a situation. And this is where I know some things that I don't want to reveal as a game master, but he came from a situation where his own background itself was very, very tumultuous. So his character's at a very emotional place in his life. And when he comes in and sees a situation which is in some ways reminiscent, at least on the emotional level, of what he's just experienced, a very protective streak in him kicks off of the world's a really bad place. No matter how bad this town is, it's worse out there. And so what happens at this point is the father then locks horns with him and basically says, I want you guys to take them and go. And he forces an up and down vote across the party, which really hits one character hard in particular because he's a hired gun and basically said, yes or no, are you going to do what I'm asking you to do? At which point, once again, to this guy's credit, his character did back off and take another tact. He did not lock down and stop the game or, you know, pitch a fit or anything like that. You know, he's not that type of guy. This is where I think the game master can do some more work, because the first thing I did was I used an equally strong-willed NPC to try and back him down a little bit. This is not going to work in every game, and it's not going to work in every gaming group, of course. But I say it's not going to work in every game because, let's be honest, in the average D&D group, if someone starts throwing their weight around, you roll for initiative, and the party's probably going to win. It really didn't solve anything. It actually just reinforced the problem. The great thing about Skies of Glass is that wounds and injury are such a serious issue that, you know, in D&D, losing a couple hit points off the top doesn't matter. In Skies of Glass, the idea of getting shot is designed to be just as detrimental as it is in real life. Even escalating to a level of physical conflict, you do with a very, very strong knowledge that even if you win, you could be in really bad shape for a really long amount of time. And so I think that threat helps kind of keep people's heads a little bit cooler. But the other thing I was able to do as a game master was, one of my things that I insist upon when I run a game is, in addition to knowing some background on the characters and some personality about the characters and getting the group template together, I also want to have a few hooks I can use. I want them to give me some unresolved issues in their lives that I can use throughout the game. Now, I can't reveal this one because this is one that's a secret to his character and did not come out too much. But they eventually met up with this other NPC. They were on a train leaving Jessup. They did finally leave the town. They were on a train leaving Jessup. The train gets stopped, and there's basically an illicit exchange going down. And in the process, this NPC finds them and basically says, I'm going to get you guys out of here because there are people coming to kill you. And he leads them off the road. And this character, this alpha character, once again, starts piping up, starts getting really aggressive with this guy. I don't want any BS games. Who are you? What do you want? You know, blah, blah. Starts rattling off all these questions. Well, this guy just so happens to know some of the bit of his background and starts answering his questions real honestly, including getting to a piece of information. He only got to the tip of the iceberg, but he said, OK, here's your answers. A, B, C, D. Horrible personal secret. Want me to keep going? As a game master, you know, I had a way to exert some pressure on the character that kind of put things back under control. You know, one was a threat of violence, and I don't know if it would have gone there, but certainly the risk was there. And the other was a threat that his deep secrets were going to be exposed and possibly put him in a very, very precarious position as a character. With all that thrown out there, Chad, does that give you a better sense of what's going on? And, sure. And what would you do either as a player? Let's say you're a fellow player. Let's say you're in John's shoes first. What would you do as John? You're playing a character, and the character's personality is that he's not some loud, boisterous whatever. You know, he's not per se a follower, but he's not a screamer either.
You have to understand that I like to consider myself a reformed alpha player. I'm still an alpha player, but I have come to a place in my life, mainly through a Kicked in the Dice Bags episode, where Adam and I both kind of laid it on the table about, like, these are our sins as an alpha player. And I recognize this in myself. Where I'm at now in gaming is that I want to lift up other players when I am a player. I want to make other players awesome. And I don't mean mechanically, like I'm a bard and I give them a +2 to attack. I mean, conceptually, where it's like I set them up to be awesome. I set them up for really cool situations where I can even my character being loud and obnoxious and boisterous, I can be a sort of a setup pratfall. You know, it's like I do something jerky and then they slap me down for it in a really cool way. And that's awesome. And what I would do in this situation, playing a subtle character yet not being a subtle player, I would start interacting and in-character role-playing on the side with the other sort of subtle players. And I would not manipulate them to go to one side or another, but I would start trying to spurn them to some sort of action, to try to lead them down the path of having an opinion and then to eventually express that opinion.
Well, you know, actually, that's
in the form of role play.
That's a really interesting thought. And this is actually one that Chad, I've seen you use in games, I've used in games. I think really probably the vast majority, if not all of the hosts I've seen use this at one point or another in a game. Have you ever been at a show, any kind of show, you know, a musical, a circus, I don't care what. And just out of curiosity, start look at what's going on outside of the spotlight, you know, elsewhere on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes you see some really interesting things occurring. Sometimes you don't. But sometimes you see some really interesting things occurring. And now there's an approach that I think could work, which is we have at this point effectively within the party four beta characters, PCs, one beta NPC, and one NPC that's kind of, I don't know, at this point he really hasn't totally revealed his personality, so we'll put him out of the picture. There were several opportunities there where the alpha was not doing anything, where John, even if you didn't engage him, you could have started some pretty serious stuff. Or interesting stuff. I don't mean serious stuff like, you know, shooting things or whatever. But you could have started some pretty deep stuff with the other people in the party, particularly the guy that's playing your brother.
Well, here's a logistical issue that I see with this, is that you guys are playing this all online. You're all on, like, what, Skype or Google Hangouts or whatever.
Right.
Right. It's all individuals sitting in individual homes that are geographically desperate from each other. And you're on microphones and headsets. And the problem with that is that only one person can role play at a time. I mean, yeah, everybody can talk at once, but it doesn't work.
No, that's true. But I think more what I'm referring to is, especially while they were on the train, there was a point where the alpha character was asleep. Several of the beta characters
started a card game. As I recall, I was the only one who did anything at that point.
No, and that's a fair point. But I guess kind of my point is, you could have escalated that to something a bit more intense than a card game, you know. Grabbed your brother and said something like, because part of John's backstory here, and I'll try to keep this very quick, but part of John's backstory is he and his brother left a failed peach orchard that was being run by their parents, who are still alive and still trying to eke out a living there. And you could have grabbed him and started a more intense conversation about, are we seriously going to go back there someday? You know, because I don't see that working out, and got some potentially really deep, heavy RP going there. And the alpha's asleep. I mean, the alpha's not in your way. I mean, this is not something you have to do as simultaneous roleplay. This could have been done.
Yeah, but that's a backstory tangent. That doesn't have anything to do with anything that's going on. I would have found it boring.
Suggestion. It's a suggestion. Let me ask you guys this, too. This was the first game you played, right?
Second.
No, third.
Second,
well,
okay.
Third, depending on how you... It's
maybe kind of, the fifth, the tenth,
well,
20th.
Yeah, because of the fact that there was a character creation session, and on top of that, the sessions get cut in half because they're recorded in two parts, and it's...
Let me put it this way. It's early days yet.
Right, yes. It's an early session.
It's early days, and you guys, except for the two of you, have never role played with any of these people before. Is that a correct statement?
That is correct.
Okay. So what we have here, it's not sounding like it's an in-game or character issue to me. It sounds like this is a new game, new group, new people through the mirror darkly of an online Skype game instead of a face-to-face thing. Probably is going to take some time for this group of people, not characters, to thaw and warm up. And because you guys are still in that early stage of trying to figure out what level is acceptable of role playing and what is not acceptable, and can't talk
about
this.
That's a fair point. And even more directly to what John said about him feeling the backstory thing was really somewhat superfluous, there is also the issue that not only have the players not felt each other out, but the characters don't have a huge amount, at least within the actual played portion of the game, putting the group template aside. They do not actually have within the played portion of a game a huge amount of shared history to discuss or to figure out or to hash out. They don't have these side plans. They don't have mysteries they're trying to unravel. And so I absolutely agree that I think a lot of this is simply growing pains.
And what I think you guys have going in your favor is that you have this dude who's an alpha player, because he's not sitting there trying to feel everybody out. He's jumping in with full feet, which means that that's getting that plot train moving. And as a game master, I know that I really liked having those kinds of people in my game. I mean, remember way back in the day, we always used to joke about Phil and how wild Phil was and how ridiculous his plans were. But damn if he didn't get things moving. And yeah, I think that things will fall in line here. I think that you guys will, you know, sort of get to a point where the group thaws out a little bit. And what I would recommend to you guys is not any kind of like advanced sort of game mastering techniques or player techniques or these sort of plans. I don't go all FTB 9000 on you. What I would recommend as a complete outsider and an award-winning game designer and host of a podcast.
Award-winning podcast.
Award-winning podcast on role-playing game advice is I would suggest that the next time you guys game, either Dan, you on the sly plan on starting the game 30 minutes after everyone gets online, or you start the game 30 minutes early and you just have a bullshit session where you don't talk about the game.
We have
you
been doing that.
You don't talk about gaming. And that's good.
Yeah, and we
that's
need good. To keep doing it. We have been doing yes. that, but we need yes. to keep doing that because of the fact that, you know, just a couple of those is not really going to really help you build a rapport yeah. with somebody. And I also think that in addition to the people getting more comfortable with each other, the farther that we get from an implied or even explicitly stated but never actually played out starting point to a genuine shared history with very real existential threats and very real mysteries and things like that, I hope will start spurring some of the other characters into action. I think that even just building any future into this game, just getting some more history there between the people and between the characters is going to help this as well.
And I think it'll improve as we actually get to whatever it is we're getting to. I mean, I've railed before about what I think is wrong with the generally accepted narrative pace of gaming. I mean, we've already got enough hours logged into this game to start to finish the Lord of the Rings Extended Edition, and we're just now getting our toes wet. And that's not your fault. It's not our fault. It's just what gaming is or has become at any rate. So I'm pretty much banking on increased personal familiarity, like Chad was talking about, and evolution into a real plot that we're all involved in, as opposed to a sort of patchwork of backstories, turning us into more of a united group than just, well, shit, I don't know what to do. What do you want to do? I don't know. I don't care. Okay, we'll do what he does.
And then I would also recommend pointing the finger of blame.
Yes.
That's absolutely.
There's going to be a huge amount of blame and a huge amount of Deus Ex Machina that I, tons of.
Railroads. Blame storming.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Absolute.
Yes. And yes.
We're literally on the plot rails.
No, you're not anymore.
You need to get into a chat client where the game master can selectively mute players for everyone else.
That's
like,
right.
Okay, you're done.
And what I'm going to do is open up an individual chat session with every single player. And to every one of them, I will blame the problem on another player just picked at random. This will create complete healthiness within our
game.
That
sounds like an awesome con game. Like, you'd have to make it meta. You'd have to have some sort of social RP situation where, like, everyone blames someone else, but no two people blame the same person, and no one blames the person that's blaming them. Go.
We could call this game Blame Storm.
Yes.
And
yes.
All played with texting on each other's phone. And you play it via social media, Facebook, G+, Twitter, and all that, but it has to be your actual named accounts, and it has to be done publicly and live. And then at the end of it, you could say, oh, haha, this is just.
And everyone is required to change their relationship status on Facebook at least once during the game.
Yes. Yes.
Including and especially people who have never set their relationship status on Facebook.
Precisely.
In the last 8 years.
If you're married, you need to set it to single. If you're single, you need to set it to married. Yep. Yeah. If you're gay, you just became straight. If you're straight, you're straight to gay.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just, absolutely. Yeah. Cats and dogs absolutely. Getting along. It's complete mayhem. Anyway, all right. Thank you guys for tuning in. I think we're going to wrap this one up. As I said, I'm hoping as of the next episode, we can start pushing back towards our more traditional show links. But I guess we'll just see how my throat holds up because it is better. But I do still have my days and I can't, unfortunately, predict when those days will be. So anyways, you guys have a great week and great games. And we will catch you all next time.
See ya. See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.